Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 231, episode 5 of Der Daily Zeitgeist,
yeah!
A production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness. It's Friday, May 27th, 2022, which of course means that it is National Cellophane Tape Day.
Oh yeah, shout out cellophane tape, like scotch tape, that like little tape.
Oh, that's what scotch tape is called?
Yeah, it's the only reason I know this, right? In Japanese, we call it cellotape, like, which is short for cellophane tape. So growing up, when my mom was always like, give me some tape, she'd be like, cellotape kashite or something like that. I was like, oh, so I always heard it as cellotape, but it's just our normal, usual tape, not our packing tape, our scotch tape as we know it here. 3M.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that is one of those branding things. But they got my ass, Miles.
Mm-hmm.
They got me. Call it a Kleenex, call it scotch tape. Even when I'm asking for Pepsi, I say, yeah, give me a Coke. Because it's just...
They know.
I am a brand baby.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, my name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Potatoes O'Brien, and I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray!
Hey, don't give me too much energy on this dark Friday, but yes, it's Miles, Hideo Noho, in the building, ready to get the outrage started.
Yeah.
My God.
Well, we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by a very funny and talented podcaster, author, TV personality. She's the author of the book Tropical Attire, Encouraged, and Other Phrases That Scare Me. Host of the podcast, Allison Rosen is your new best friend, as well as Childish, a podcast for parents, and the rare person with parents. I think I know a couple of those that she hosts with Greg Fitzsimmons. And Upworthy Weekly, please welcome the hilarious, the brilliant, Allison Rosen!
Allison!
Hello, it's so nice to be here. And can I just hone in on what I think is probably the most interesting aspect of this episode? Now, are we talking like scotch tape as opposed to masking tape or packing tape? Because
okay, so like...
when you said cellophane tape, I was thinking there is a clear tape that is more the consistency.
Of
Look,
cellophane.
I don't want to go against your mom. Obviously,
no.
She knows.
No, you're absolutely right. Because it became, so scotch tape isn't in Japan.
Okay.
Cellophane tape is more prominent. So,
and is that the like thicker clear tape that like once it sticks to itself, you are screwed?
Yeah. I mean, it's anything that's like invisible tape, you know, like when you use for like wrapping gifts and things, falls into the cellophane family.
I am a fan of all, like, give me a scotch tape. Cellophane tape is hard to work with, but I do. When you said it was Cellophane Tape Day, I thought, now that's a dumb holiday I can get behind.
Yeah.
Right.
I like all those tapes. When I find a roll of it, I get excited. I'm a simple lady.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, the other thing I didn't mention, although maybe I am remiss to not mention it, is that it's also National Grape Popsicle Day, too.
So, okay.
Tape or grape?
Is your day. I actually hate artificial grape flavor, so that one can get fucked. Can I ask you guys a question? Because I know that you're both either married or in relationships.
I'm married now. Yep.
Both congratulations.
Married now. Couple married dudes.
I thought I saw some romantic pictures on Instagram, but yes. I wasn't 100% sure. Congratulations.
Yes, despite my discomfort of sharing my personal life too much on social media. I was like, well, you know, y'all got to know about this.
Yeah.
This is a moment we can all celebrate.
This is a big one.
Yeah.
It's important. Okay. Before the show started, I feel there's only one right answer to this. I said to my husband, I said to him, sorry for bugging you. What is the only correct response he could have had? Sorry for bugging you, honey.
It's all good.
Yeah. Well, that's your ass, but okay. What's up?
I mean, sorry for bugging. I don't know. If you come at me with some sorry for bugging you stuff, then I'm like, oh, what's up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I usually ignore it or say, oh, no, honey, no, you don't bother me.
Not like ignore the request to speak. You're saying ignore that there's any transgression that needs to be sorry for bugging.
I just ignore any. I don't read past sorry. I'm like, uh-oh, this can't be good. So I'm just going to block it out.
The bugging had already happened.
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay.
When I'm saying it, I'll just tell you the answer because everyone is failing me this morning and I love all of you. I say, sorry for bugging you, honey. And he says, no, you weren't bugging me. That is what I want to happen. But instead he went, it's okay. Which is not what I was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I said sorry for bugging you, I didn't really feel like I had been bugging. I mean, maybe it was on me for referring to it as bugging him because all I had said was, did you happen to bring in the groceries? And he hadn't yet. And then I'm like, sorry for bugging. I mean, I didn't say it in that.
You just rolled your eyes when you said sorry for bugging.
I know.
Now we've got some more texture to this one.
But I didn't actually say it in that tone. I actually said it in a, mm-hmm. I felt like I could tell he was irritated. So then I said, sorry for bugging you. And he's like, ugh. All right. Okay, look, I'm sorry that I brought this into our otherwise newsy show.
I will usually make fun of if it's really a thing like sorry for bugging you and asking you to bring in the groceries, I will usually make fun of myself for having not brought in the groceries or something like that. Because that does feel like a thing that you shouldn't have to ask me to do.
Send him an email. I'm gonna download this episode on his phone.
Yeah. Yeah, there's like frozen items just in the car, just getting warm. Just he's gonna let it cook like that. Is that the implication here?
I mean, thankfully, right. It is one of those things where I gotta check the weather on the phone versus actually stepping outside. And it was there's not that many frozen items, so it's okay.
Mm.
But
sure.
Still.
Yeah.
Grocery delivery or groceries brought home from the store?
It's grocery delivery.
All right. Then he's got a little bit of a window.
There's a window there.
Yeah, because there's ice on the frozen thing.
My thing is I've been burned so bad from like the times I've been to Palm Springs in like the summer and bought something.
By the sun?
By
the sun? Just you've been burned so bad.
Yeah. No, but just going there and like buying groceries and putting them in a car and like running two errands. And I'm like, oh, the shrimp I bought has gone completely bad.
Scampi.
From like a 20-minute stop so I could pick up Rita's Italian Ice next door to the Costco.
Now,
and I'm like,
shrimp.
What happened to this shrimp? So ever since then, like even in now, we don't even get like the same intensity of heat. I'm like so on top of not leaving shit out of the refrigerator because, man, I remember insisting that the shrimp hadn't gone bad and everybody was like, bro, this shit is fucked up. Like, don't even.
Yeah.
Like, please let this dream go. And I'm like, but I just bought it. And now we're going like, it's, we can tell. Just please. So since then,
I like my shrimp sauteed in a nice, dirty grocery store ice water, melted ice water. Like, that's kind of how I like my shrimp prepared. So
yeah. I would have loved my soft shell shrimp I was cooking up.
Well, that's the thing with shrimp. And no offense to shrimp, if they're listening. But sometimes even the best of shrimp is questionable.
Sure.
Because shrimp smells shrimpy, which is not my favorite scent.
Yeah. Right. You got to really be like, okay, is that regular shrimp or do I feel a little bit of that ammonia stank that tickles the nose that your body's saying, warning, Will Robinson, do not eat.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or danger, Will Robinson. Sorry for all the fans.
Some of the both best and like most confounding advice I ever got was somebody just being like, your body knows. So like, just listen to your body when it comes to like, if the food tastes just like a little bit off. Which I think would be good if my brain, if I wasn't like the sort of person who just constantly head fucked myself.
I think this was me saying that to you about how.
No, I got that like when I was constantly? Like 12. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
and
yeah.
And I've like, it's never left my mind anytime I'm like eating something. I'm like, is my body telling me anything?
Right.
But I, you know, I don't have the sort of mental certitude to just.
The mind-body connection.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Well, that's like when you're like, am I getting a strong message from my gut? And I'm not talking about food poisoning here. I'm just talking about life decisions or like when you're trying to like read a situation. Is this a gut message or is this anxiety? So I have trouble reading those two.
What's the old intuition telling me? You know? Right. All right, Allison, we're going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment. First, we're going to tell our listeners a couple of the things that we're talking about. We're just going to talk about, you know, we're going to continue to talk about Uvalde and general state. I don't know what this is, has made me convinced that we're headed for fascism. I'll talk about why that's the case. But, you know, the news is just horrifying, getting more horrifying. So we will talk about that story. We'll talk about one of the kids from Jaws. Have you guys heard about this movie, Jaws? It's my favorite movie. I saw it 100 times before I was 6 years old. There are these two little whippersnappers in the film Jaws who get, you know, on the big day when Amity Island opens its beaches for July 4th. I think it's July 4th. The mayor opens them and people are out on the beach and then a shark fin is spotted and the police roll up on a boat and like have like 10 guns drawn on the shark. And then his two kids hold it, doing like a little prankaroo. Mm. One of those kids is now the sheriff of Martha's Vineyard. And he is like embroiled or like was involved in a similar thing, like a great white shark hoax where he like put someone in the slammer, whatever the jail in Martha's Vineyard looks like. I'm sure it's like an Andy Griffith type thing.
It's like one of those bridges of Madison County, but like with bars on it.
Right.
Exactly. That's so whimsical.
Uh-huh. All of that, plenty more. But first, Allison, we do like to ask our guest, what is something from your search history?
A recent search of mine, and this was such an open-ended search that it did not lead me to what I was looking for, but I typed in water flask, which did not pull up the specific thing I was looking for. Okay, I know this is hard to believe because it's like a basic quality of human beings. However, unlike most every other human being, I hate drinking water. I find it hard to suck down. I think it is gross.
Wait, what do you mean hard? Like, you're like, oh, God, like, please, it's like, not another, but it's like it, you feel disgusted by water?
Pretty much, yeah.
Wow, okay, all right,
I mean, look, if I'm at some kind of, not to be a Hollywood type, but like, if I'm at some kind of general meeting or something, and I'm offered a bottle of water, I'll have a few sips, you know?
Sure,
if I'm doing a TV appearance, and I'm offered a chilly bottle of water, yes, I will quaff. But in general, if I'm thirsty, it is not my go-to.
Got you.
So for years and years, pretty much, I didn't expect to go this deep and this revelatory, because this makes me look like a real weirdo. Sugar-free, caffeine-free, flavored, carbonated sodas have been what I drink,
wow,
like around the clock.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But that is very bad for you. And it's specifically very bad for the enamel on your teeth.
Yeah.
So I finally, after years, was like, I have to stop this. This is like not good. So I've switched to water. So I actually now I've joined the human race and I'm a normal person and I drink water. And
was like, there a search in your past where you were like, what to drink instead of unflavored? And it was like, water?
Probably.
Teeth have become soft. Alternative beverage for helping?
But so anyway, Stacey London of What Not to Wear evidently also hates water. There are people like us out there.
I get that. Yeah, yeah.
I'm also hate water. There's far more people who love water, but there are other people who hate water too. So she's like, I don't like drinking water. I find it boring. I find it hard to drink. But I got this water flask and it's shaped kind of like an alcohol flask. And it's sort of flat and it's like very stylish looking. And she held it up in this video and she's like, and I find that it makes it easier to drink. You know, what do you know? Like score one for design. So I searched water flask as if this might pull it up, forgetting that every water bottle is referred to as a flask. So right. That was my search.
And
so
like Hydro Flask, that brand too. So right. Like, did you mean this? And you're like, no, I want booze hip flask.
Yes.
So I'm going to give you some confounding advice I once got. Just listen to your body. Your body's telling you whether or not you need something. But I like that. That is a question I have because I go back and forth on water, as I think most people do. Like, I don't think anyone's ever just like fully, you know, I constantly like to be drinking water, but I am a sweaty person. Like with people who aren't big water drinkers, I feel like sometimes it might just be like they don't sweat that much. They don't need that much water to be like constantly cycling through their body.
I mean, I know people who are not water drinkers. Guess what? They have kidney stones.
Well, oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, I know people who, like, really, like, are reaping what they sow, where they're like, bro, I can't handle water. They're like, I'm passing the stone. I got to drink more water. The doctor said it's because I don't drink enough water. So seeing shit like that had me, like, guzzling gallons of water just to see the amount of pain I saw people in from passing kidney stones.
Yeah, so you would think maybe I'm not properly, or maybe I wasn't properly hydrated given that I didn't drink water. But because I used to drink so much of my favorite, and I like to refer to it as a flavored water because that sounds healthy, but it really is a diet. It's somewhere between diet soda and flavored water.
Like
I would drink
Sprite?
So much of it.
Can you just like give us a specific here? Because like you're using so many descriptors. And as I said, I'm a brand baby.
Are you accusing me of purposefully obfuscating?
No.
For years, it was Pavilion's brand Refresh. That's R-E-F-R-E.
Refreshé?
Yes.
Yeah.
Wild cherry flavored Refreshé.
I like that you brought it down to the people, though, and didn't do the Refreshé.
That's what we always jokingly called it. We're like, yo, let me get that Refreshé in high school, I remember, because I was our like broke boy soda.
It's very delicious. But then I switched to another ethical brand, Walmart brand. I think it's called Clear Choice, either key lime or cherry limeade. Oh, man, did that scratch an itch that I didn't know I had. So good. And it's even cheaper. Wow. Right now, I do have a Diet 7-Up with me. But I also have three waters near me.
Okay.
Three. This is just if I can't take it anymore and I need to go to the diet soda. But my urine was clear.
Oh, okay.
Like I'm very hydrated.
Yeah.
Just not with, now it's water, but in the past it was with water-like substances.
Got it.
I have very specific like memories of points in my life that were unhappy where I was drinking diet caffeine-free sodas. And
how could you be unhappy during those times of your life? That's a happy drink.
Like when I first started like working at Cracked, we like had a small windowless office above a wig shop in 34th Street. And I was just like eating a 6-inch, I would get a foot long Subway sub, eat half of it one day, save the other half for the next day, get one diet Sprite every day and chew nicotine gum. And it was dark days, man. Yeah.
Maybe if you had a Fresca, you would have felt differently.
Maybe. It's almost definite that I would have. What's something you think is overrated?
Oh, okay. Look, I don't want to bring the haters out, but I think camping is overrated. I recently went on a camping trip with my kids' preschool, and I referred to it as camping. I posted a photo, and the camping truthers came for me because did not sleep in a tent. There were three different camping accommodations you could be in at this campground and RV park. And we were in, it was really like a mobile home kind of thing. It was on wheels. It was very narrow. Daniel and I had to turn sideways to pass each other. But it did have a little tiny bathroom in it, and it had a bed, but it had no cell service, no Wi-Fi, and it was very hot, and there were bugs, and physically it was uncomfortable, and the whole trip was called a camping trip, so I called it camping, but a lot of people had to let me know, what you're doing is not camping.
Yeah.
So I guess, so I don't know if what I'm, I don't know if I'm saying camping is overrated, or if I'm saying
camping.
These people.
The rigid definitions of camping is overrated.
Yes.
First of all, I'm shocked that you as a woman on the internet would hear feel any backlash from a take on something like camping.
No, I guess I'm folding in my, hey, get off my buns to these people,
yeah,
to my camping is overrated. I'm sure there's a scenario where this is lovely. I actually could envision it. Like, I could imagine going out someplace and like sleeping under the stars and stuff.
Yeah.
Being wonderful. I did that once when I was young and it was great and I did enjoy it. But I just feel that we have gotten to a point where we don't have to make everything so challenging. So I don't understand the fun of it.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I'm with them though. You can't call it camping unless you sleep in the same hole that you shit in.
Oh wow.
That's the only way it's
Is it a hard enough. Structure? It's not camping. Yurt, maybe. I'll maybe give you that if it's a yurt. But then no tent, no camp. That's glamping, which is a thing I think a lot of people like to get on. Like, that's actually glamping.
Yeah, someone accused me of that. It didn't feel glam.
None of this shit is glamorous, by the way.
Yeah, like already you, adding a bunch of preschoolers to the mix. Yeah, that was going to be a real enjoyable trip. Real relaxing. What are you talking about? Like half the time, you're probably like, Jesus, what are they doing? They like this? I'm so hot in here. Like that's the part of a good, any experience I've had that's a good camping trip is because the weather's nice enough that I'm either not frozen at night or absolutely burning like down and sweat at night either. Like when you don't have like the temperature right, it does make shit just feel uncomfortable. And I'm not outdoorsy enough to be like, you know, damn it all, I just want to be out here.
Yeah, I kept thinking, I envision camping as, because the one time I did it was up in Sequoia and it was nice and cool. I imagine it like walking around in the cool, crisp mountain air. And this was like a, you know, circle of like frizzy sweat around your scalp.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When you get out of the shower. Not that I took a shower, but if I did, I imagine that would have you know, sprung up immediately.
Right. A circle of frizzy sweat. Yeah. Okay.
I'm just too sweaty.
I think you might be drinking too much carbonated water just based on that description. But
your sweat get all foamy at your hairline?
Well, no, what? I'm sorry. This is if you have naturally curly, the sweat itself is not frizzy. It's
no,
if your hair
it's
has
hair.
Some natural curl to it.
Yeah, those little baby hairs start going.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I feel you.
Thank you.
What is something you think is underrated?
I'm painting a real healthy picture of myself, but I feel that butter is underrated, specifically when you go to a restaurant and they give you bread. I don't want your magical chef's made special herby olive oil or like this is our flavored brie cheese blend butter stuff. If you're going to give bread, and by the way, please do give bread. Just give me butter too, because I don't want to have to ask for butter because then I feel really unclassy.
Y'all got any Wonder Bread back there or something? I could just hit up.
Excuse me. Do you have parquet? Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I have to pretend it's for my kids. My kids who only eat buttered noodles. So, yeah.
They're like, miss, you're just here with your husband. Yeah. At home. Okay. They would like some later. Jesus.
Yeah. So look, if I'm going to enjoy bread, I'm going to enjoy butter on, and I am going to, if I'm at a restaurant, I would like to have some butter on the bread. And I recognize there's all sorts of special things to put on the bread, but I just would like butter, please. don't make me ask. It's too embarrassing.
Also, please don't put a ton of... I was at this restaurant a couple weeks ago where they had butter, but they put so much rock salt like on the pad of butter to make it look cool. I'm like, this is going to render it inedible. Like that much salt. Like, I can't do this. I remember I love butter so much. My mom would get mad at me because I would use so many pads of butter for like one piece of bread as a kid that whenever I get bread, I'm always like, I need the butter.
Yeah.
Please.
See, in so many restaurants now, they just bring some kind of like special infused spread and they keep their butter in the back.
Yeah, I'm here for that. I personally, you know, it must be takes all times, but fuck with my butter all you want. Like, give me something surprising. Put a little stick in the butter on the top of the butter. I like a lot of salt on the top on the butter.
It's like a twig, you mean? Like some kind of special twig?
I think like rosemary, but it could be also not rosemary. And I'd be like, they know what they're doing. I like to be surprised on my butter.
You know, the best is, though, you get bread at the table that doesn't need anything. When you eat, they're like, oh my God, what is this?
I think I know of exactly one example of that, and that's Red Lobster. But
yeah, well, that
every,
is one
every place, I feel like my default. Do you try the bread without butter first?
No.
Oh, yeah. I always go butter first, unless they're like,
if there's butter, I'm
butter.
Yeah. That's like, they got to go together. Yeah, there's no need to. Why would I do that?
But frequently lately, there isn't butter. That's what I'm saying, you guys.
Yeah. And we're now in this place, too, where we've normalized paying for bread. Like, when you go to these high, like a couple high-end restaurants now, they're like, oh, and you could get bread service for $18. I'm like, we need to go. This is fucking, like, this is stupid.
We need to get That's bread when I reach service? Into my diaper bag and pull out the loaf I brought from home.
Yeah.
There you go.
And you're like, can I actually, do you have a bread knife back there? And you're like.
You're like, oh, it's $30 for bread knife service.
Oh, there is a bread knife fee if you've brought your own bread.
An uncorking fee for the bread knife. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Every family has skeletons in their closet. Mine certainly does. Ones that go back 100 years and reach thousands of miles back to our hometown in Sicily. Ever since I can remember, my relatives told the story of my great-great-grandmother who was killed by the mafia. I'm Joe Piazza, and in my new podcast, I'm taking on a generational vendetta, visiting the scene of the crime, confronting mafia experts, tracking down Italian officials, and even consulting mediums to set the record straight on my great-great-grandmother's mysterious disappearance. And in between the fact-finding missions, I'll be drinking a lot of wine and eating all of the pasta. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello. From Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. This month, we're bringing you the stories of disappearing acts. There's the 17th century fraudster who convinced men she was a German princess, the 1950s folk singer who literally drove off into the sunset and was never heard from again, the First Nations activist whose kidnapping and murder ignited decades of discourse about Indigenous women's disappearances, and the young daughter of a Russian czar whose legendary escape led to even more intrigue and speculation. These stories make us consider what it means to disappear and why a woman might even want to make herself scarce. Listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there. I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything. A moment that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these very moments.
the last couple of years has been the hardest season of our marriage for sure. I'm surprised our marriage survived it. I think we both are. I think we both were barely holding on. Nothing compares to how hard this is.
Their stories are full of candor, awe, and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change.
True behavior change is really identity change. Every action you take is a vote for the type of person you wish to become.
Listen to A Slight Change of Plans on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. And so the story of Uvalde has, I don't know, I guess it's gotten like worse. Videos of parents screaming for the police to do something while, you know, you can hear the shooter in the building just shooting an automatic weapon. I think they threatened to taser people who...
Yeah, they just subdue a parent who was like, why are you standing out here? Our children are being killed inside. And they had to subdue one guy and then like threatening to tase another person.
Yeah.
It's just one of the, this thing has, it's gotten grim on so many levels. Just the more you learn about it. Again, like Uvalde, like many places in this country, they spent about 40% of their municipal budget on law enforcement. For what?
Right.
This massacre has, again, exposed police, not as heroes, but as cowards with guns that would rather engage unarmed people with their backs turned than to serve and protect. And I think there's a lot of, I feel like we need to tear down a few myths because a lot of it was, we just saw it so clearly in front of us, right? First, we see parents screaming at the armed police to engage somebody who's an active, like he's murdering people, right?
Yeah. The police have their back to the school and are facing out like they're fucking bouncers.
Exactly.
Like they're protecting him.
Right. And we have to first accept again that there's a legal precedent that says basically police are not obligated to protect us. That's real. There's a series of Supreme Court decisions that have basically made it so these people are legally protected killers that also have cowards' rights. First, there's a case, DeShaney versus Winnebago County of 1989. In this case, there was a young boy who was being abused by his father, and the county social services knew about it, but they did nothing to remove the child until he ended up in a vegetative state. And then the court ruled that the state didn't have a special obligation to protect a citizen against harms it did not create. In 2005, Jessica Gonzalez sued Castle Rock, Colorado, because she had a restraining order against her husband and he kidnapped three of her kids. She called the police and said, I have a restraining order against this person. They have three of my kids. They said, well, why don't you call us later? Maybe he brought them home. He killed the kids and then opened fire in a police department and then was killed by police. In that decision, the Supreme Court said Antonin Scalia argued that, quote, a well-established tradition of police discretion has long coexisted with apparently mandatory arrest statutes. Essentially saying it's
authoritarian.
It's up to them.
You live in a police state. You can't question their judgment. They're the ones who are allowed to use guns, and you're not allowed to question their judgment when they use them or choose not to. It doesn't matter. They just have like absolute power.
Right.
So what is the theorized reasoning for why they were keeping parents out?
I think, I don't know. I mean, it sounds like they were saying they're waiting for backup. They're trying to create a perimeter around the crime
scene. When the person has an automatic assault rifle, I think the standard operating order for the police that aren't like an armed tactical unit is to backup.
Because it'll just be like more carnage. You know, I have to admit, I have been so focused on the idea that like guns are the problem here and the right is throwing up all these other arguments that are distractions from what the real issue is, that now that the talk has turned to the cops, at the beginning, I was kind of not paying attention to that because even that felt like a distraction. So I'm a little bit, even though this has all happened in like rapidly, I'm a little bit late to the news of this. So before the show, I was like trying to quickly kind of catch up on this story. So I feel like I don't know all the details of this, although the details of this keep changing too.
Right.
So if I'm understanding correctly, what has come out, like at first, the story was that the cops had shot him, right?
And yeah, that
he was wearing armor.
Like border officer.
But then did it come out that he wasn't actually wearing armor?
They said he had a tactical vest, but like they don't believe they had any hardened like plates in it. That would have been the actual bullet stopping plates. But even more than that, like I think the other thing that's coming out is that it took 40 minutes of this person in the building. And if at the press conference that Beto O'Rourke interrupted, the sheriff there was saying how the gunman had gone to the school and a resource officer engaged him, but didn't exchange gunfire. So I don't know what that engagement was exactly. Like there's so many of these weird things where like, but then what was that? And again, I think that's why like this feels like just sort of it's like an omni crisis in this one thing that we're having to realize all at the same time. Like if you look at the church parishioners in California, they had the bravery to stop the gunman themselves in that mass shooting recently. The teachers in this instinct had to be unarmed surrogates for the police in the school while they threatened, you know, parents with tasers who could no longer just sit idly by while their children were being killed. Then if you think about the gunman in Brooklyn, he tipped the police off himself to where he was at, and a member of the community apprehended him. So
they had just expanded the number of police on the subway, like huge budget to do that. And when the shooting and like gas attack like happened to the subway, a cop like turned and told somebody to call 911. Like that's, and like they didn't catch him even though he was just like walking around and dropped his wallet and shit.
Went to Cat's Deli, I think.
And this the shooter in Texas, too, he, after shooting his grandmother, he posted it on Facebook and he said he's going to shoot an elementary school. I don't know who was looking at his Facebook, but I mean, he was posting it, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's
like, I don't. Yeah. That one I have trouble with because I don't know how many times a day shit like that happens. Just the way the internet is, you know, and I like. It's like that's a horrifying nightmare situation. For the parents, for whoever the cop was on the outside who, you know, was put in charge of like holding the parents back. Like that, I do think like the lasting point here is that the fact that this 18-year-old could arm himself to the point that they had to wait for tactical backup is like there is something systemically wrong there.
Right.
But it does tie into this larger story we're seeing where the police, who are heroized and also trusted as like the number one source of our like mass media, our mainstream media, are not trustworthy and are not the heroes that like movies have been telling us they are and that the right wants to believe they are.
Yeah. I mean, this is, I'm not trying to defend these cops. I don't know anything about them, but I know this is this was like a 15,000 people town. Like I would imagine the kindest thing I can say is I suspect these cops were not prepared for this situation. And so they should have just stood aside because they definitely didn't help things.
But I think that goes to a larger fact about what is policing even.
Right.
Yeah.
If we're in a situation like this, right? So those parents who were screaming outside the school while they knew their kids were in imminent danger and they stood idly by, that's all of us in this country right now. And I think we need to recognize that. A horrific disaster unfolds in front of our eyes. And we've been told since birth that there are people that will intervene to protect us. Yet they look on as if they are powerless. That really fucked me up. To feel that powerless, to know how severe the situation is, and you're screaming at the people who you've been told are going to protect you, but these parents have been rendered completely powerless by a system that is only interested in maintaining like a very rigid power structure. So those police are also our politicians, telling us all the time what good they do and how much worse things would be if the situation changed, despite people constantly asking for something different. We scream, just like the parents do, we scream for body autonomy, for equality, for kids to not have to have equivalent experience as like combat veterans. And they're more interested in crowd control, more interested in optics rather than tangible outcomes. And we've been fed this really these poisonous myths about electoralism and crime. And that acrid taste that we all experience, like this, like everyone is, they're like, something is so fucked up, right? And some people can put their finger on it, others can't. But that's our bodies no longer being able to accept these myths, because we're looking at this, we look at results over and over. So they say, vote and I will curb police violence. Nothing. Vote and I will protect our LGBTQ youth. Nothing. Vote and I will make life easier. Nothing. So we need to stop like asking to make it make sense, because I feel like that's like the most dominant take I see on Twitter. How is this make it make sense? And I think the thing is, we have to accept that it does not make sense and will not make sense. The only sense this situation makes is that we live under a horrifyingly cruel system of governance and finance, and the way these two things work together typically render people powerless when they're trying to protect themselves or further their own interests, especially when that butts up against, you know, whatever a gigantic entity there is. So I think at the end of the day, some people may be gullible enough due to their own privileged lives to think that nothing needs to change, and they're like, it's only these like little adjustments that have to be made. But I think many people are really starting to see how backwards and absurd this whole situation is. And we can't just let this pass.
Yeah.
What we need is to understand that the challenge of our time is to try and right the ship. Because they've demonstrated, look, we can't keep acting like these people know what they're doing. How many more kids need to die? How many more like marginalized people need to be victimized and turned into the like true villains of society, when we know it's not trans people that are taking people's jobs or why the factory shut down? It's because it's corporation did what was best for their bottom line, but we still allow these narratives to exist and poison people's minds. And we're just constantly asking for just the smallest things to help make our lives better. But you look at the Senate, they care more about their ancient racist traditions, the filibuster, more than children being murdered in mass.
We used to be able to go to lunch together.
Yeah. But you know what it is? I think that level of pathology needs to be something every person in America needs to accept. That's what we're looking at. We allow children to be killed in this country.
Yeah. Like, this has added a layer of urgency for me, because it's just another example of a story that is just like, okay, like this system is broken. The populace is bleeding. Like it is a poisonous like system that is just like spewing more poison into the system. And the longer that we hang around in this system, where you see images like a cop protecting a schoolhouse with his back to the schoolhouse while a school shooting is taking place, and like, you know, pushing the parents back, like, The longer that happens, the more likely it is that fascists are going to consolidate power, because they're the only ones who are offering an alternative to the mainstream, is like your Donald Trump, your Tucker Carlson. And it won't be a thing where people are like, that is a Republican politician with fascist tendencies. Like, that I'm waking up to the fact that the most likely outcome here is open and official fascism in America in the not too distant future, like by the time my kids are in high school, because the status quo is no longer viable. Like, when people run for president, like, they are always like, change, like, I'm running as an outsider. That's what resonates with people, except for in the case of Trump, when it was Biden could be like, I'm not Trump, but then Biden being like a old school like party person and like having this presidency is only going to underline the fact more. Like, but it was, you know, since 2008, when the financial collapse happened, it's like Obama running on hope and change, bait and switch, Trump running on America is an apocalypse and I alone can fix it, and racism, bait and switch. And then Biden just being like, I'm not Trump. And
somehow bait and switch that too.
And also, you know, here are some things that I will do, and then bait and switch, not doing anything. And like, it just, it feels like the people are calling out for an alternative so desperately, but the entire U.S. immune system is designed to kill off leftism and any threat to business and commerce and like corporate rule, which is what we have now. Like that, the thing that is happening right now with guns is not because of the people, you know, who live in rural communities and talk about like they'll take my guns out of my cold dead hands and shit like that. It's because of corporations that manufacture guns. Like that's what we're in. And the Democrats are complicit in that too. But so it is like the U.S. immune system is designed to kill off leftism, any threat to business. It is not designed to stop fascism. Fascism is good for business. That's why the closest America came to being overtly, openly fascist was when like there was something called literally the business plot. It's organized by the heads of industry, and they tried to take over the government from FDR before he could get into World War II. If a socialist alternative doesn't find a way to rise up in the next, you know, handful of years, we will be in a fascist dictatorship, like in the not too distant future. Like that feels inevitable to me at this point, like based on just what we're seeing, the, you know, just this, the current system and its death rattle, and like everybody openly seeing it for what it is, and then nobody having anything to do. Like I Google, like I was just like, I did it. Like I knew I wasn't going to find anything. I was like, what do I do with anger in America? Like what? And then it was like, here's how to deal with anger. Like jog, walk, right. Take a walk outside. Like we just like,
have you journaled?
Yeah. It's right. Just like we individualize it and turn it into like our problem. I've heard it from, you know, young people who we work with who are like, you know, I'm watching the news and like feeling like shit because that's the least I can do. And it's like, no, it's not your fault. It's not our fault. We are like in the fucking matrix. Like we really are like in a system that is fully built like down to a cellular level to lie to you about what is possible. And we need to like find ways to educate ourselves about what is possible and like build like from the ground up a fucking imagination, like a revolutionary imagination, because it's like we don't have it. We just like don't have it in America. We have no idea what a third party, like what, even when we're saying like we need a alternative that's not fascism, I don't think anybody, like even I certainly don't like have a concrete idea of like what that would look like. We have to like create that future and like build that imagination from
the
ground. I
think we're so propagandized to be afraid of it.
Right.
Because of the Cold War and because of the right wing and because of so many things that it's like it would have to be cloaked in entirely new language. Although like if people truly want Medicare for all as long as it is presented in a way that, you know, doesn't frighten them.
Yeah.
I have a question that's a little bit of a tangent. So I spend too much time on Twitter. And, you know, Twitter's like a lovely place where people are reasonable. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's because I spend time on Twitter, and maybe that's not an accurate reflection of how a lot of people are. But I have this notion of half of the country, and it feels like no matter what awful thing happens, like you present like, look, this is going to happen, or this, you know, this horrible thing is happening to these people. This horrible thing is happening to these people. And there's, you know, a segment of the population that's like, fine, I don't give a fuck. Fine, I don't care. And I don't know if it's like because they're in it for the loaves, or they're truly heartless, or they want other people to be in dire straits. So I think it feels like 19 children died. Fine, I don't care. That's their attitude. And so my question for you is, do you think there really are people for whom 19 kids dying, they just don't care? Or is that like a posture they take because it helps their argument?
I like that. I don't care if there are like isolated people, but like I do for them and their family. That's brutal. Like something inside of you has died. But like we are so disproportionately inundated with those people's opinions and also like straw man version of those people's opinions from like the Democrats saying that's how the Republicans think, or the Republicans saying that the Democrats think. Nobody is like pointing out, just like over 60% of people like want these very concrete steps to be taken. And like we are all alike in the sense that like this shit was fucking unacceptable and like completely horrifying. Like that's, I don't know. Like that's kind of how I'm feeling, is that there is a lot of noise that is designed to mask the fact that the majority of us want the same things in a lot of cases.
Most people want access to abortion. Most people want common sense gun control.
Most people don't want to go broke being sick.
Yes.
But I'm saying that's the reason, like, why the political party has done such a good job is to label some of these things with certain, like, thought-killing cliche labels. Like, just call that socialism. It ends the conversation for someone in their mind right there.
Insidious the, like, lack of revolutionary imagination is. Like, the thing that always pops in my head when I think of, like, a revolutionary like leftism in America is like the scene in Forrest Gump in Washington, D.C., because it's like the ultimate boomer revision of history. And like the hippies are just like marching around in lines that don't go anywhere. And like everyone is just a cartoon. Like the Black Panthers are a cartoon. Like at one point they're like shouting at the top of their lungs at Forrest Gump, like political platitudes. Right. And then he leaves and they keep shouting at the empty space where he was, because they're just like, I don't know what fucking Robert Zemeckis's insane theory was, but I think it was like that they're just like animatronic, like anger robots. That's like what he made them in his vision of that. But that is like, the boomers really fucked us, man. They really like took their idea of revolution and then turned it into like a thing that is like, well, that's how unrealistic people think. And fortunately, like they are going away, but like we really like it. We need to excavate that. Like that shit needs to be cut out. It is a fucking cancer. The idea that like you can't have revolutionary activism in the United States is the status quo belief, and like we need to address that.
Right. And I think people don't realize is the relative prosperity they experienced as a generation helped cool those jets a little bit, you know.
Yeah, and the relative
experiencing abundance, and now you're dealing with generations who have nothing.
Yeah.
And those tricks don't work.
Yeah.
Because you can't subdue us. There isn't prosperity. So how are you going to subdue people? They're only going to be more focused on their lack of things. And what happens is that creates the space for someone to come in and give you a fucked up explanation for what that is. Hey, it's these people. Hey, it's these people. Hey, it's this. And that's the sort of knife's edge that we're on. They're fully going to buy into one version, or we have to, or do the uncomfortable thing and realize just how much of a failed system we have, honestly. That's why every other country looks on and is like, what is going on with y'all over there?
Like the thing that I was reading this morning was like, so somebody was just like, one of the greatest culture shocks when I arrived in the U.S. was the blind veneration of police. After years and years of living here and reading about this country, I now realize that it's the structural pillar of white supremacy. There are so many things that are not normal in like...
Yeah.
In this country that we have just accepted.
This is the thing, right? And you talk about what's happening on the right. Like Ted Cruz ran away from a Sky journalist from the UK who just asked a very straightforward question about like, why does this seem to be an American problem? And I'll play this because this is a very straightforward answer. But the way Ted Cruz freaks out, I think, is instructive.
15 sets of parents who are never going to get to kiss their child goodnight again.
Is this the moment to reform gun laws?
Oh, word.
You know, it's easy to go to politics.
Oh, shut the fuck up. You're a politician.
I get that that's where the media likes to go.
No, it's not. It's where many of the people we've talked to here like to go.
The proposals from Democrats in the media, inevitably, when some violent psychopath murders people,
a violent psychopath who's able to get a weapon so easily. 18-year-old with two AR-15s.
If you want to stop violent crime, the proposals the Democrats had, none of them would have stopped this.
But why does this only happen in your country? I really think that's what many people around the world just, they cannot fathom. Why only in America? Why is this American exceptionalism so awful?
You know, I'm sorry you think American exceptionism is awful.
I think this aspect of it.
You get your political agenda.
No, it's honestly,
God love you.
Senator, it's not. I just want to understand why you do not think that guns are the problem.
Why is this just an American problem?
It is just an American problem.
He goes on. He just, you know, says you're a propagandist, nonsense. And again,
I hate him so much.
This is someone who's asked a question, couldn't offer you a solution.
No.
I think that's what people need to really hone in on when politicians speak. Seldom are they actually offering a tangible solution. And that should set alarms off in your head as to where the country, like what the direction is of the country, because the people who are making the laws, they don't care about solving anything.
Biden tweeted, as a nation, we must ask, when in God's name will we stand up to the gun lobby? When in God's name will we do what needs to be done? I'm sick and tired of it. We have to act. What are you sick and tired of? Name it, man. What are you that like? Is it just their party? Is it like say what needs to happen?
Like what? Are the lobbyists visiting me? No, they visit y'all. Their job is to interact with politicians. So why are you asking us when you need to figure that out on your own? And that's an empty gesture to just say, when are we going to stop? Say something.
You tell me, motherfucker. You tell me.
It's like hot potato. They're all just turning around and pointing fingers.
Laura Trump on Fox News goes on. They can't say anything that makes any sense. So she's just going to go off and talk about how we don't have two-parent homes anymore. It's not guns. It's not inequality. It's the other shit.
Who the fuck is Laura Trump again?
Across the board at things like the fact that, you know, we have the dissolution of the family in so many respects. We have fatherless children on the rise in America. We have the loss of religion in so many aspects of our country where it was a foundation of our country at one time. You can't discount the rise of social media and the role that that has played in things like this. Mm. And then the mental health aspect of this obviously has to be a focus.
I'm not even going to let her finish that because Greg Abbott slashed mental health budgets in the state. So that's moot. There's no, don't talk about mental health when it's never even been anything you've actually advocated for. It's all emptiness, right? And again, this is the explanation. This is a group of people who are, people on Fox News are assuredly horrified to hear that 19 children were killed and two adults, right? And then you have someone come in and not say, it's not guns. It's not the fact that, you know, we have like places like 4chan or other things where people can get radicalized or share weird ideas and things like that. It's that we don't have God.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like we need a theocracy. That's the solution that's being handed out is a theocracy.
That's the only solution that has its own channel, you know, because the other channels, the other channels are all part of the just speak around the truth. Look the other way. Like, so that's what I'm saying. Like, that is why the inability for anybody to just like say what it is from anywhere except, you know, a fascist perspective, like, is what is making me so worried that like this is where it's headed, because it's like it's all just corporate like bullshit and inaction, and then that fascism, that theocracy bullshit.
Right. They're filling the knowledge gap with fascist talking points.
Yeah.
Because there are people asking, what do we do?
Yeah.
Because left or right, if you're not wealthy, you're being like, man, shit's kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
But if on one channel, it's like, it's theocracy. That's all we need. We need more God. We need more guns. They're saying something, although it's not really something they will legislate on it eventually, as they are a lot of other things. But yeah, you flip the switch to like CNN or whatever. They can't advocate for anything different. And I think that shows you the direction it's going, because the Republicans on the right, they don't have the numbers to win like actual just straight up majorities of things. So they have to defeat the process of even having like a democratic system of elections, even though that's, you know, arguably debatable, whatever, to completely just say, nah, all right, we close the door. Now we're in charge. We got this. And these, guess what? These are all the rules we like to enforce. And we'll just be sitting there confused because we have to find a way. The signals coming from the media have to offer people something else, because it's just the confusion and trying to subdue their outrage. It's not that that's how we get into an even darker place.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and talk about Jaws.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce.
Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hello. From Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. This month, we're bringing you the stories of disappearing acts. There's the 17th century fraudster who convinced men she was a German princess, the 1950s folk singer who literally drove off into the sunset and was never heard from again, the First Nations activist whose kidnapping and murder ignited decades of discourse about Indigenous women's disappearances, and the young daughter of a Russian czar whose legendary escape led to even more intrigue and speculation. These stories make us consider what it means to disappear and why a woman might even want to make herself scarce. Listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has skeletons in their closet. Mine certainly does. Ones that go back 100 years and reach thousands of miles back to our hometown in Sicily. Ever since I can remember, my relatives told the story of my great-great-grandmother who was killed by the mafia. I'm Joe Piazza, and in my new podcast, I'm taking on a generational vendetta, visiting the scene of the crime, confronting mafia experts, tracking down Italian officials, and even consulting mediums to set the record straight on my great-great-grandmother's mysterious disappearance. And in between the fact-finding missions, I'll be drinking a lot of wine and eating all of the pasta. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there. I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything. A moment that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these very moments.
The last couple of years has been the hardest season of our marriage, for sure. I'm surprised our marriage survived it. I think we both are. I think we both were barely holding on. Nothing compares to how hard this is.
Their stories are full of candor, awe, and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change.
True behavior change is really identity change. Every action you take is a vote for the type of person you wish to become.
Listen to A Slight Change of Plans on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. And Jaws is my favorite movie. There's a scene, the big scene, kind of the, like, I think it's the midpoint of the film when they open the beaches, even though Sheriff Brody knows it's a bad move. Everybody's watching the water, kind of nervous because a shark's been eating people. And then there's a shark fin, but it turns out to be kids doing a prank. Doing a goof. Mm-hmm. And one of those kids, so that apparently they just like cast Jaws with like people they passed on the way to like filming the scene, because like one of those kids was a Martha's Vineyard resident. That's where they shot Jaws, and like for all intents and purposes, like Amity Island is Martha's Vineyard. So one of those kids is now the sheriff of Martha's Vineyard, where the film was shot, and also the son of a former police chief. So there's a connection to Jaws 4, The Revenge, in which Martin Brody's son was a deputy and has his dang hand bit off in the first scene. And then he gets eaten too. I don't know how he ends up getting his hand bit off and then also like falling into the water to get eaten.
Well, maybe he liked the first bite.
Yeah. Yeah, but like I understand the shark liked the first bite, but the shark's in the water. He's on a dang boat.
I know, but and I'm saying maybe he was like, ow, I bit my hand off. Okay, daddy. See, let me hop in. Let me find out.
Anyways, so this dude once busted someone for doing what he pretended to do in Jaws. In 2008, he arrested someone for disorderly conduct for telling 30 people that he'd seen a pair of great whites while in a fishing boat.
Okay.
So, and it, like, the story sounds, I'm just inherently like, well, you know, this person's a cop. They're probably just wanting to arrest somebody. But apparently the fishing boat that the person claimed he was on and the owner of the boat didn't seem to exist.
Okay.
So, based on my investigation, Officer Searle's report says, there is no credibility to be given to Michael Lipenzo's shark story. But then, other people did report seeing a shark fin in the water on the same day. Like, the lifeguards closed the beaches, spotters in a plane saw something. And then a month before that, fishermen saw what they thought was a great white near the beach. And yeah, they, like, this is all before the person that he put in jail for saying they saw a shark got put in jail. And then a carcass of a seal washed up, which is a plot point from Jaws 2, except it's an orca whale, prompting them to call in a shark specialist, presumably a Richard Dreyfuss type, who examined the decomposing body of the seal and was like, I don't know, man, it's a dead seal. But and then because of Jaws, like, everybody wanted there to be a shark attack because it would make for a good story. There wasn't ultimately a shark attack, but I do feel like this dude arrested somebody for seeing a shark, basically.
I'm working on a theory. Now, I have a huge admission. This is in an episode of Admissions. I have not seen Jaws. I know this is a humongous lap.
Oh, Jack just passed away.
Sorry. Oh, no, come back.
Jack
come
passed back. Away. She was joking, Jack. She was joking, right?
I was joking. Oh, I've seen it 6,000 times.
Thank you.
Even though I've seen it 6,000 times, I seem to be a little unclear on a plot point. Did this guy in the movie get in trouble for pretending to be a shark fan? He did.
It's like a fun little like sidebar. It's like a false
breaks the tension.
Yeah, like there's people are like, a shark's definitely coming. A shark's definitely coming. You as the viewer know a shark is coming because you're watching a movie called Jaws, and it's like the big climactic day when the mayor opened the beach. Shark fin is spotted. The police all pull up in a boat, like have all their guns drawn, and then the kid comes out and he's like, oh, it was a goof. He made me do it. It's very cute, actually.
But
it's exactly how my kids. Well, it doesn't like follow his story, Allison. It doesn't become a tale of like
movie.
Justice and vengeance by the.
Because
the real shark comes along and starts eating people immediately after that.
So he gets upstaged by the real shark. Okay, here's my theory. So Patty Duke. So you know the movie Miracle Worker?
This never
play
seen
and
it.
Movie. Did you say you've never seen it?
I've never seen it. So were you?
But you've seen Jaws this many times? Oh boy, now I'm gonna die. Yeah. Okay, but it's about Helen.
Jack's seen it 6,000 times.
I've never heard of Helen Keller.
Yeah, it's about Helen Keller. So Patty Duke, that Patty Duke, played Helen Keller when she was a kid, but apparently she always wanted to play. I'm forgetting what
Helen Keller's teacher.
Yes. She got older, she wanted to play the teacher. And then when she got older, she eventually did play the teacher. So here is my theory. This kid in the movie played the kid, but because he'd had that experience, maybe he wanted to one day play the other
Brody.
Role.
Fucking truth bomb. Drop that bomb, Justin. Wow.
That's right.
How
so
about you
now.
The perfect
mm-hmm.
anecdote.
So
explain
his whole
this.
Life has been, he's been, you know, forging towards this one point where he gets to, whether, you know, justified or not, put this person in jail.
Right. He's
all
he's
been
like,
leading to
I want
to
be Chief Brody.
That's right.
Roy Scheider ain't shit. That's
then he was in like a janky like copy of that show Sequest DSV that Roy Scheider was in too. He's like, yeah, man, I got to be in this one. It's called Ocean Journey. But well, good for him. But also, ACAB does include being the Jaws
the sheriff of yeah, right. Even Brody. I mean, Sheriff Brody was maybe our worst cop of all time. He was alcoholic. I think that was the subtext of the movie. Did not like water, even though he was the sheriff of Martha's Vineyard.
I don't like water. Yeah. I could be a sheriff.
Yeah. He did. Not only did he not like drinking it, he only liked drinking the booze, but he didn't like going near it, going on boats, which made it problematic. And then in the second movie, he opens fire on a crowded beach at a school of bluefish because he has such PTSD from the first movie. But then his PTSD comes to life. There is really a shark. Anyways, it's a great, great film franchise. Allison Rosen, thank you for explaining this news story for us. Thank you for being on the show yeah. today.
Thank you for having me.
Where can people find you, follow you, hear you, all that good stuff?
Oh my gosh, please follow me on social media at Allison Rosen on Twitter and Instagram. Just one L, because my parents wanted me to have to say just one L for the rest of my life. Just Allison Rosen. Listen to my shows. Upworthy Weekly is a lighthearted news podcast that comes out on Saturdays. And also Allison Rosen is your new best friend and Childish.
Boom. Is there a tweet or some other work of social media you've been enjoying?
Yes, I on TikTok, I'm obsessed with this woman. Her account is called Veneer Check. This does not seem like something I would become obsessed with. However, it's like my favorite thing on TikTok. Her name is Dr. Sarah. She's a Harvard DMD. A DMD is like it's like a more advanced dentist or something. And what she does is she looks at pictures of a celebrity and like goes like from when they're young to now and talks about their teeth. And she's like, oh, here's their natural teeth and kind of like explains like you'll notice the lateral ones a little bit smaller and da 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 and the difference in the shade. And then she's like, here, it looks like they have some veneers. And then she just explains like whether she thinks they have veneers or not and the dental work they've had. And it is surprisingly riveting. And if you go in the comments, you'll see like a lot of people have become strangely obsessed. Veneer check. Riveting.
It's so funny because this is like one of Jamie Loftus's like hobbies is to always check out the veneers and just like look at pictures and always be like veneers, veneer to not veneer. So
she should go look at her.
Yeah, I'm gonna. She probably knows about it. And I'm like, please tell me you know about. And she'd probably be like veneer check. And I'm like, okay, never mind.
It's fascinating, riveting.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, so many people got them. You know, I'm lucky. Yep. I got my old regulars in.
Miles, where can people find you? What is a tweet you've been enjoying?
Find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray. You know about 420 Day Fiance, where Sophia Alexander and I talk about 90 Day Fiance. And if you like basketball, because the conference finals are pumping right now, check out the latest episode of Mad Boosties. Miles and Jack got Mad Boosties, our NBA podcast.
Yeah, with Dragonfly Jones. One of the best. And follows on NBA Twitter.
For sure. Some tweets that I like. Gosh, what do I even talk about? Oh, this one was very interesting. Quinta Brunson, who created Abbott Elementary, tweeted this out and it said, wild how many people have asked for a school shooting episode of the show I write. People are that deeply removed from demanding more from the politicians they've elected and are instead demanding entertainment. I can't ask, quote, are y'all okay anymore? Because the answer is no. And someone actually replied to that at Carl Logan tweeted, they're asking the wrong Abbott to do something.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of it's just wild. Just the fact that even Quinta Brunson, who gave us one of the best shows this year, is then even like, why are they coming to me for this?
Yeah.
But it shows our inherent reflexes.
Yeah, we're just not all right. Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't know where to look, you know,
right.
Because there's no leadership. So, let's see. You can find me on Twitter at Jack_O'Brien. Tweet I've been enjoying from Good Time Janice's Got the Blunt, maybe? Jerry Seinfeld doing stand-up voice. Anybody here ever think about killing themselves? That just made me laugh.
Jerry. What are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, it's another one that I should have just let you read for. You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and our website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes, where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as the song that we think you might enjoy. Miles, what song do we think people might enjoy?
I'm going to do the same song that we wrote out on yesterday. Soccer 96, I Was Gonna Fight Fascism. Listen to the song. Mm-hmm. Just listen to it. See what it inspires in you. That you were gonna do something, because we're finding ourselves in a very uncomfortable situation. So have a little laugh, but also, you know, find it within you to know that there are enough of us out there that we can, you know, create the community that we need to at least protect ourselves. So Soccer 96, I Was Gonna Fight Fascism. One more time, DJ, spin it back.
All right. Well, The Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That's going to do it for us this morning. We're back this afternoon with a special themed episode about going out into nature. And we will talk to y'all then. Bye.
Bye.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off. Starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta
right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances. Whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death, we all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.